Hey everyone, welcome back to an all new episode of the Nine Circles Audio Thing. I am your host, Dan Kaplan, and we are back for another edition of our Album of the Month podcast. This is now our second of these. Hopefully going to be more of a thing as we move forward. Hopefully going to have different kinds of audio content on this thing once we have time and figure out what kinds of things we want to do. But for now, you're stuck with this. We had our chat about the May Album of the Month. As you may recall, we do sort of look backs at the previous month's Album of the Month. So even though it is June, we are talking about May. And our Album of the Month was Amorphis, Queen of Time, the 13th album from the Finnish progressive melodic death. I don't know what you would even call them. They're just sort of amorphous at this point. When we talk about that, they are their own thing, their own singular entity. They dropped their 13th album about 3 weeks ago, and we have not been able to stop listening to it. We love the heck out of it, by and large. There were, you know, some dedicated amorphous diehards here, but there were also some relative newbies, and everyone's sort of, you know, we're found themselves on the same train of thought, the same wavelength with regard to this thing. So, like I said, we talked about this on Sunday. It took me a little while to get this posted, get it over to you, because, hey, I'm in nursing school and it sucks. So I won't waste any more of your time. Let's jump right into it. Here is our chat from Sunday, the Nine Circles Audio Thing, and our Album of the Month for May 2018, Amorphis, Queen of Time. Hey, internet friends, we are back for another edition of our Album of the Month here on the Nine Circles Audio Thing. I am your host, Dan Kaplan, and with me are five of my esteemed colleagues from Nine Circles, the metal blog. I am going to go in order, which doesn't mean anything to you because this is purely a visual thing we're talking here, and this is an audio medium. First up, from out in California, Mr. Vincent Martinek. How you doing, Vince?
I am doing okay. I'm melting a little in this heat, but such is my curse.
Yes. Yes.
I chose this life, so I can't really complain.
I've already told you what the weather's like here, so I won't further.
And I will not repeat the expletives that I hurled in your direction.
Joining us for the very first time on the Nine Circles Audio Thing, we're super stoked about that. Mr. Mark McKeel, how you doing, Mark?
I'm doing well. Good to be
Welcome.
With you guys.
Welcome aboard. Pleasure to meet you over the internet, I guess, to put a face to the name.
Absolutely.
All righty. With us tentatively from up north, Mr. Corey Butterworth.
Hello.
I am still there. Oh man, what a time to have internet difficulties when you're already hungover, right?
Yeah, hence the almost giving up, which I still might. We'll see.
All right. Well, we're going to hang on to you for as long as we can. As long as we can here. Next up, from out on Long Island, Mr. Chris Voss. Chris, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing good. Thank you.
Good. Glad to hear it. And last but not least, also from out in California. I'm going to do the intro, but I have a question for you too after that. Last but not least, out from California, Miss Haracat.
Hi.
Hara Vidal, Catalina Jaramillo, however you would like to.
Corey.
Which one were we going to do for this?
I'm also melting. Thank you very much.
So my question, you guys are both out in LA. Like, have you guys ever gone to a show, like met up at a show or anything like that?
Yes, we have actually. We last year we were both at Alcest, The Body and Creepers.
Yep. He also met my twin.
I met her twin sister. She has not met my twin brother, but my twin brother also does not live in California. So
wait, there's another Vince?
Yes, there is actually.
Oh my God.
My sister moved to Hawaii.
His name is Ian. He lives in Chicago and he's a stupid idiot. And I know he'll hear this because he listens to these things. Ian, you bastard.
Alrighty. Well,
I feel the same way. My sister moved to Hawaii with her husband.
Vince, would you prefer we address him as Vince Jr.?
Yes, actually, because I'm the older of the two of us, so.
Okay. Vince Jr. it is. There we go. Alrighty. Well, hey, we've done our intros. Sadly, we are without Josh Stewart today. We have run into some technical difficulties. Thank you, Google. Josh was unable to join the Hangout. Corey was only just able to before we started recording. So yeah, we clearly have a great, great chat medium going here. But anyway, we are here, as I mentioned.
Hey, we may need some ad money, so don't do too much knocking Google on the air.
Yeah, right, right.
Still looking for sponsorships.
We are here, as I mentioned in the very beginning, for our Album of the Month podcast. We are into June, but you know how we do it. We go over the previous month's Album of the Month. And Corey, since you blew your load about this thing in the last podcast, why don't you tell the folks at home, what album are we going to be talking about today?
We're going to talk about Amorphis' Queen of Time.
We sure are.
Yeah.
Amorphis, Queen of Time, the seventh studio album they have done with current vocalist Tommy Judson. I believe it's number, 13 or 14 overall? 13. Lucky number 13. Came out May 18th, so not quite a month ago. We're looking at about three weeks ago. This was one that the Amorphis fans among us, I think we're looking at with a great degree of anticipation, and the non-Amorphis fans among us, we're not really looking at all before last call, or last podcast, but here we are. We're going to talk about it. I don't know who would like to start. Anyone in the Hangout want to do hand raise?
I think we should give the honor to Corey.
God damn it.
All right.
Corey, since we don't know what time he has here, let's go.
Yeah, we don't know how much time is left on this earth.
Corey, what'd you think about Queen of Time?
I loved it. I like talking about Amorphis in general because, you know, peaks and valleys, their peaks are really, really high, and their valleys are also quite high. Yes. But I remember, Dan, we've talked about these guys so many times, and I remember talking about Under the Red Cloud when that came out, and how we had almost become, I don't want to say stale to what they were doing, Judson era Amorphis, but we were kind of getting to that point, and then Under the Red Cloud came out, it was awesome, and I think Queen of Time just pushes things even further. This might be my favorite album out of, I guess, that series. I mean, it's hard to, you know, compare to like Skyforger, because those have just always resonated with me year after year after year. But I was very impressed with this. I remember when The Bee came out, we were having a little bit of a back and forth, and it's kind of some hesitancy, you know, wouldn't be the worst thing if they did a few new things, like maybe cutting out the harsh vocals, like whatever. Yep. But when everything came together, this thing is mint start to finish. And it offers a lot, and I don't know. I mean, they know what they're doing. They're experts, and I there were a couple albums that I wasn't super crazy about some years back, like Circle, but these last two have just blown me away, and this one I think it might be the top of the list.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, but it really was kind of after Skyforger, which I think was such a peak for them.
Yeah.
Beginning of Times was like fine.
It was okay.
Circle, I wasn't really that into it all, but yeah, you know, Under the Red Cloud brought things back in a big way, and this kind of continues that. It's funny because they still are doing that late era Amorphis sound, but yeah. Something about it, the last two albums, it just sounds so rejuvenated, you know, even though it is like that sort of not quite mellow death, not quite prog death, somewhere in the middle, like folky yeah. elements here and there type thing. They sound refreshed. There's like new life breathed yeah. into these songs.
Some minor tweaks to the formula that they know so well, and it's made a huge difference in the last couple albums.
I do wonder how much of that is due to this is the, you know, not coincidentally, the second album in a row they've done with Jens Bogren.
Alrighty.
Here, I want to hear more about that. I want to hear more about that in just a sec. But yeah, you know, I think he's played a large part in this. It sounds fantastic, and I think he kind of like presses the right buttons and tweaks the right knobs, and you know, gets the right amount of everything Amorphis needs. Yeah. So, Hera, let's go over to you. What do you think of Queen of Time?
I love it. Like, it's, how do I put this in words without like wanting to sing the entirety? Because I love that album so much.
Oh man. The phrase I regularly use with Amorphous is I would get down on one knee and declare my undying love for Amorphous. Are you at that level too?
Yeah, I've declared my love for Amorphous since like I discovered them in like 2011, and then I went back and then went forward and I was like, yeah, I'm sticking with my guns on this band.
Yeah.
Well, even, you know, and even when they had that weak period, you know, it wasn't like it's like I am sort of with Opeth, you know, like, yeah, like their last three albums I haven't been nuts about. I know we have talked about this as a group. I know some people really like them, some people don't. I'm not nuts about the new albums, but I'm not gonna like stop loving and respecting Opeth, because I think, you know, they're still doing what moves them. They're still doing it naturally. Same thing with Amorphous. Even though Circle wasn't great, it still felt like they were doing what they loved and what felt true to them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So what were your thoughts on, I know Corey and I mentioned, what were your thoughts on the B when it first came out? Do you like the song, what do you think of it as a lead single, and, you know, in the context of the album?
I probably played that song about 100 times when it first came out. So,
oh my gosh. Did the song start to like sonically disintegrate before your ears?
No.
Before your ears.
No. I mean, this is how you know that I actually like a song. I memorize it to the point where I can probably whistle it back to you.
Okay.
So.
And you're at that. And you're at that point with the B.
Yeah.
All right. So let's hear it.
No, not again.
You're going to deny the podcast listeners that joy?
Yes, you can't just introduce this concept.
Oh. Well, I would do it for you, but I can't whistle. So sorry, podcast listeners.
Yeah, I can probably whistle it back.
There we go. All right.
I can probably whistle it back, but I don't want to right now.
Classically, no.
Oh, my gosh. Now, I know there are two among us who were either sort of lukewarm on Amorphous, not totally familiar with Amorphous before this. So I want to save them for last, because, you know, just sort of that's going to be, I think, a longer, more in-depth conversation about like the exposure to this band. Chris, I know you have some experience. You've had some exposure to Amorphous before this.
I have. So, yeah, that makes sense. I think I'm kind of in the midway point. So my experience with Amorphous was probably, I think the first album I heard in its entirety was Tuonela.
Okay.
So way back then. And then from there, it was probably from Decibel. Decibel had said something in that, given something good marks. So I checked that out, went back in time to 10,000 Lakes and Carillion Isthmus, got a sense, and it was good. It was something that I enjoyed. And then I hit Am Universum, and I just did not like the kind of adult oriented rock direction that they went in, so I kind of dropped it. So I wound up kind of missing.
There is like cringing in the background.
I'm laughing my ass off because,
I think a lot of it depends on when you discover them, and kind of like any music, it's where you are in your life. And at that point, that wasn't quite what I was looking for. So I had kind of tuned down, even though they had changed singers. I think I vaguely looked at Silent Waters and Eclipse and Skyforger, but nothing really kind of stood out to anything that I wanted to listen to until Under the Red Cloud came out. And then when Under the Red Cloud came out, I was just like, oh, this is now what I want. You're at that age where you've kind of gone through whatever experimentation in music you are, and you come back and you see, oh, we've got a new vocalist. We're getting back to the heavier stuff. We're mixing in folk. So I kind of dove back in and really started to appreciate it. When it came time for Queen of Time, I was fairly excited. It wasn't probably the biggest thing on my radar. So I don't know that I would have given it the examination I did if Corey hadn't have gone head over heels and said, we're going to do this for the May release. But I really like it. I don't know that I like it as much as Under the Red Cloud. I think they're kind of on an equal footing. Queen of Time goes a little bit more with some of the orchestral pieces and some of the choir pieces. They retain a lot of the heaviness that I like that came back with Under the Red Cloud. The thing that really struck me about it more than anything else was it's very mid-paced. It's technically very beautiful. The vocals are outstanding. The classical elements are all there. Choir, folk. I mean, this is essentially, in a weird way, it has all the elements of power metal without being anything remotely like power metal. And it kind of struck me that it's so amazing how you can take all of these elements and two bands can do them in such very different ways and have them come out with this crazy kind of sincerity and honesty, but still sound completely different. The B was fantastic when it came out. I love that kind of guitar delay, kind of tapping intro. I love when it gets heavy. The first three songs just in general, I think are the strongest things on there. And my God, if we have to have any more sax in 2018 in metal, I'm probably going to blow my brains out. But,
I was going to talk about that.
It works. I mean, it works here. I think it's a really solid start to finish album.
Yeah, I don't think you'd get any argument from that out of us. I'm with you. I mean, I think like they are. I don't want to even call them middle of the road. In terms, like what you were saying about, you know, like them sort of being like what at a point where like they can give you what you want to hear. I don't think that's necessarily like middle of the road, but it's just, I feel like they have found their element and they're fully in it. And yep. they just know, you know, like they'll have some, you know, slight variations on it here. I mean, I can't remember ever having heard a sax solo in an Amorphis thing before, but Hera has a note.
I have.
Go for it.
So I'm like, okay, because this is how I know that I was like, okay, they're gonna go in another direction. And 2018 is a year of the prominent metal sax, but
The year of the prominent metal sax.
Yep, the year of the prominent metal sax.
China, you need to adjust your calendar. Throw out ox and throw in prominent metal sax.
Yep. So in 2017, they actually released a live album called A Night, An Evening with Friends at Uvula. And they featured a very prominent sax in there, and it was all throughout the album. And once we get to Among Stars, we'll talk about Annika being there. So
okay,
there's
okay.
more coming from me because I did my homework.
Yeah.
To be fair, the sax completely works.
Exactly, my boy.
I did dig it.
I'm gonna diverge for just a second here because we're talking about prominent metal sax. The sax solo on that new Ghost album, I gotta say, I'm here for it. I'm a fan.
Yeah,
what the hell is the name of the song? It's track five. I cannot remember it for the life of me, but
I have not heard it yet, so.
Oh gosh.
It's fine.
I don't Hera, think I've what ever are you doing? Listened to a Ghost song before.
It is Miasma.
Miasma, that's it. Yes, I was gonna say Memoria, but that's not it. Miasma. Yeah, I'm here for it. I think Ghost is another one of those bands where like Amorphis, like it's just enough outside of the expected wheelhouse, but like still totally works.
Well, something you said made sense. It I don't think they've changed anything. They have really stuck to what they do, and they've refined it and made it their own. And you come to that openly or you don't. So that's why I for changed. They've done what they've been doing. I've just kind of become lately more receptive to it, which is why I think the album hit. But I'd be interested to know from the rest of the group too. I mean, how do you classify Latter Day Amorphis? What genre, if you got to fit them into a niche, where do you put them?
They are Amorphis.
Yeah.
That's excellent.
Okay. No, and I don't even mean that jokingly. I mean, they are their own sound. Like nobody, what's his name? Michael Captain at Last Rites wrote about this in his review. Nobody really sounds like Amorphis right now.
No. It's power, it's Melodeath, it's hard rock, it's got some 70s prog to it. I mean, they are definitely an entity that are kind of unclassifiable, except that they are Amorphis. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that brings up another excellent instance of like, do things need to be classified in order for it to work? You know, I don't feel like you need to like zero in on like this is XX, like X and X and X, like sub genre.
Right.
Like it doesn't really need a classification beyond it's amorphous.
I definitely am getting fatigue of those like random genre, like, you know, we had black gaze and now there's sludge core and, you know, like this and that, and I'm just like, it just, it's whatever, just fucking listen to it, you know.
It works as a signifier, you know, like, but you know, yeah, but like once it gets past a certain point, it's like you're just trying to be pretentious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, I think to an extent it's also like kind of a crutch for certain areas of the music press, maybe.
I think that's more what I was getting on with it. You know, for a band to say we are this is like it's a signifier to people who would be interested in listening to their music, like what you can kind of expect. But for I don't know. I've seen people get like people try to shoehorn stuff into these very, very narrow categories, and it just doesn't
like,
work.
Cool. You have found a category for this band. They are literally the only band in it. Good job.
Yeah, exactly. What purpose does that serve? That doesn't work as a signifier to anybody else.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like what you can expect from it. Just talk about what you liked about it instead of trying to talk about what it sounds like.
Exactly.
Again, labeling a genre, anything, it's such a weird subjective experience because
exactly
your own shit goes into it. Your own perception of what a genre is and what it is goes into it. So it's like, why would you label it for the rest of them when everyone else has a different experience?
It's the subjectivity of it is exactly what the problem with it is. Like you could say amorphous is, you know, this or that or whatever, but their sound encompasses such a wide scope that mm-hmm. your what you choose to focus in on and label them as says more about you than it does about them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Vince,
to bring it back to what the chat's actually about.
Well, I was going to say since you've chimed in here, let's move on to you. Now, you were not really familiar with Amorphous before we had chosen this album.
That's correct. If you listen to the chat we did about Panopticon at the very end when Corey dropped the hint that we were doing the
hint.
You know the Queen of Time. it's a podcast, but there's pretty heavy use of air quotes there. Before this, I had never listened to a single Amorphous song. I was kind of only familiar with them loosely by name. I knew that people that I knew liked them, but I had no idea what they sounded like. So my goal was, before we did this chat, I was going to listen to Amorphous' entire discography and then get, you know, the context for the Queen of Time that was needed. And, of course, that didn't work out.
I was going to say, how'd that go for you?
real life shit and other albums that I was, you know, obligated to give time to for review purposes kind of put a damper on that. But what I did listen to was Karelian Isthmus.
Okay. People can't tell the difference.
Thousand Lakes and Elegy.
Okay. And this would be the fourth.
Obviously listen to the Queen of Time. Yeah. So this is the fourth Amorphous album I've had a chance to sample. And the one I listened to before the Queen of Time was Elegy. So there's a huge chunk that is missing, I think.
Yeah.
There is.
From
my understanding of the breadth of Amorphous' discography. But I still ended up getting something out of it. You know, it was those first three albums kind of chart the trajectory for the way that the rest of it sort of goes, which is going from like really raw, nasty Finnish death metal to like weird sort of prog death metal or like, yeah, death metal with more progressive elements to like full on prog metal, like weird stuff.
Yeah.
And losing all of the death metal except for like the harsh vocals, essentially.
Right. Yeah. The gap from Karelian to Thousand Lakes is, you know, there is one, but it's not as anywhere near as pronounced as the gap from Thousand Lakes to Elegy.
Elegy was a huge, huge difference. It knocked me off of my feet a little bit going straight from that album into from Thousand Lakes into that. And I wasn't prepared for it. And honestly, I think it kind of made me really not like Elegy all that much. So I was a little bit worried about what would happen with the Queen of Time. And I liked it a lot more than I thought that I was going to, surprisingly enough.
Okay. What specifically about this current incarnation of Amorphous does it for you? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's catchy. You know, there are lots of things that I could say about the album in detriment to it. Like, it's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. I feel like it could have benefited a lot from some editing. Like, there were parts of the songs that I was listening to where I'm like, okay, does this part really need to repeat for a fourth time? Like, somebody could have just, there's little bits of things that could be chopped out here and there. But the fact that I got home from the gym and I was still humming parts of those songs to myself is like, that's really all you want from it, right? Yeah. It's just fun.
That's a good takeaway from the album. You know, if you can come home and have it in your head, like, it's doing something right.
Yeah exactly.
Any particular songs, you know, on the album that you were taken with that really, really caught you?
Honestly, one of the things that I really enjoyed the most about it was the sax solo.
All right.
The never-ending Twitter dashboard discussion absolutely will not die is this question, this constant, like, talk about saxophone and metal, and I'm just like, it's good.
Yeah.
I don't want to sound like derogatory about it. It's just, I don't know why this keeps coming up all the time. And no, it's like,
because metal internet needs something to be pissed about, you know.
Correct. Well, that's the thing. Nobody that I know is pissed about it. Everybody that I have seen talk about it is very vocally in support of saxophone and metal.
Yep.
And you know, for the most part, I am too. If it's done tastefully,
right?
You know,
it's surprising that so far this year it's been pretty tasteful. I haven't heard it kind of used in a way where I'm like, oh god, not again yet.
Yeah, like I said, I don't think I've actually ever listened to a Ghost song before, but I know that that's what spawned this most current incarnation of the saxophone and metal discussion is Ghost's new album, and specifically how tasteful and rockin' the sax solo was.
Yeah.
But there was a saxophone part, like, very, very subtly done in, I'm having the same problem that Dan has. It's track 3 from the album, and I cannot remember what it's called.
Daughter of Hate.
Yeah. Definitely one of the best songs on the album.
One of my favorite songs on the album, and it's mostly because I was not expecting how tastefully that saxophone was used in there. You know, saxophone, you think it's just like this big, brash sort of thing, this all-encompassing sound that just like kicks the door in and like takes over everyone's ears. But it was handled really nicely. And then there was also the one with Anneke von Ginsberg that I think was probably my favorite. And I can see Kat doing a little dance there, so I know that this is...
How is that not the closing track on the album, though?
I was going to say, let's talk about Among Stars.
That was my question, too. That was my actual first question when I heard that, is I'm like, how did they not end it there? Because this song, the song that came after it has
such power.
Yeah. It was so lackluster by comparison. Not even by comparison to what came before it. I'm like, how did you decide that this was what's going to cap it off and not just like let that shit kick into high gear and be done with it?
Exactly.
Right. I don't think Pyres on the Coast is a bad song. And I think if it was placed somewhere in the middle of the album or even immediately before Amongst Stars, it would have been fine. But
it did not deserve the closing spot.
Like, no,
it did not.
But that's kind of also what I mean when I say that it was an album that I think could have benefited from just a little bit of editing. You know, if somebody had been like, I don't think so. Maybe if you just switched these, maybe if you just cut out like a minute of this song here, it probably would have been a little bit more successful for me. But as it is, it's a fun album to listen to. And I had a really good time with it.
Yeah. I want to chime in before, you know, just going back to the sax solo debate. I think Chris, you're spot on when you say that, you know, so far saxes in the year of the powerful metal sax have been handled quite well. So far, I will say this means that about 2 months from now, Hunter Hahn Hendrix is going to announce the next Liturgy album, and it is all going to be intentionally bad sax.
Liturgy jazz saxophone album.
Yes.
My God.
Is this an inopportune moment to say that I liked the last Liturgy album?
Yeah, it is.
God damn it.
Chris.
Transcendental sax metal.
Oh man, I can't do that. Of all of the bands I've tried to listen to, we are talking about Liturgy's discography as a whole. There is nothing that they have ever done that has remotely interested me, and I've tried. On paper, it seems like it would be perfect because I am super into like pretentious hipster black metal, but like Liturgy is the one band that I just like, they're somehow too pretentious for me.
Well, I think he's trolling.
I don't think it's real.
I think it's like all a big practical joke.
Like quick thing, as an academic, obviously, and his whole thing about transcendental black metal, let me get into it. So, like, just real quick, like, shut the fuck up, you stupid pretentious.
Yes.
Tell us how you really feel.
The Hera cat has spoken.
Again, I come from a very interesting academic background. So when I heard this album, I think it was like 2 years ago, the artwork, I was like, shut the fuck up, you stupid pretentious bastard.
Thank God we don't have much personality.
Yeah. Oh man. Well, let's move into Mark and your take on the album. Just obviously another relative amorphous newbie.
I'm an older guy. I'm a middle-aged metalhead, and I came into listening to more modern metal in the early 2000s.
Okay.
From the 80s. So that's kind of my background. And I really liked Skyforger. I listened to Silent Waters and Skyforger, and then they kind of fell off the map for me. And I think since then I've been listening to more of these sort of underground genres, a little more Black and Death, and all these different kind of genres. And before, when you guys were talking about, you know, how would you classify them? And is there a need for classification? I think, you know, some might talk about sounds that are more major label or a little more more melodic, more mainstream. And they definitely fall into that kind of category for me. So I'm less of a fan of the more symphonic elements that they've had recently, but I think they do it really well. And I find myself agreeing with Dan quite a bit that, you know, for a very melodic kind of epic cinematic sound, I think they do it really quite well.
Yeah, they've tinkered. I mean, they've really, you know, they're not quite the same band that they were when, you know, when Tommy joined on Eclipse, but they just in making little tweaks here and there, I think they've become really good at that sound. It took them a little while to get there, but it's you know, really after kind of peaking, maybe peaking early on Skyforger, in, you know, at least in as pertains to the Tommy era, they've sort of rediscovered it, and I think they're making the right kinds of tweaks again, and they're really becoming that kind of good melodic, orchestral, symphonic. You know, they're really becoming good at it, and they're incorporating it tastefully.
Yeah, and I think for that kind of style, they do it quite well. I, you know, I find myself agreeing with Dan somewhat. I felt like, you know, in the digital age, I think there is a tendency, in my opinion, to we see albums that are way too long, just my own preference. It's such a melodic album, I kind of feel sort of burnt out by the end of the album. But it's fun. It sort of reminds me of, like, I don't know, an episode of Game of Thrones or something. You know, it's big and kind of flashy, but it's not too cheesy. It feels a little power metal-ish to me, but that's okay. You know, and they do it well. I don't think it'll be my album of the year, but I think it'll be an album that I'll come back to. And it's, yeah, bottom line, it's a fun listen.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, hey, glad you liked it. Glad your audio thing debut could be an album that you ended up, you know, having somewhat positive feelings about. Yeah.
Put me in the thumbs up category.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Any particular songs you liked from it? Were there any highlights for you?
I think just the overall feel. I probably have to look at a track list more specifically. The, you know, I like the B. That's a good track. I think it's a well put together album front to back.
Okay. Awesome.
I like the Annika track. I'm a big fan of hers.
Annika is at the point where, like, I'm pretty sure you add her to anything and she'll make it better.
She can do, like, whatever she wants, and that's it.
She's like Christopher Walken. If Christopher Walken were a Danish, Dutch. Female metal singer, you cannot add her to something and have it get worse. It doesn't.
She could pretty much like sing from a phone book, and you know.
Yeah. Seriously though,
I would pay good money to hear that. Honestly, between everything she's done with Devin Townsend, who, you know, like, spoiler alert, Corey and I, and I'm sure a couple of other folks on here are really big fans of everything she's done with him, and you know, now this, it's you know, she's not to mention her own stuff with her Anik and her you know, like the Gathering and whatnot. Like, it's just stellar all around.
So
she's at that point now where she can do whatever the hell she wants and no one can say a damn thing about it.
Yeah. This is actually my first time hearing her on anything, I think.
Really?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. God damn it, Vincent.
The Gathering.
We were actually just talking about this in the Nine Circles group chat last night. We were talking about Devin Townsend. Yeah. And I was asking for recommendations for where to start for people, because I have listened to a couple of Strapping Young Lad songs. I don't think I've listened to any of his solo stuff before, but I remember her name being associated with his solo project. Mm-hmm. And I remember somebody said her name was going to be associated with this album. And so I was looking for that. And when the track with her came out on it, I was like, okay, I understand what this is all about now. Like, she is insanely talented.
Do you like to smile big, dopey smiles? Then listen to any song in which Annika is featured.
There is a reason why I have been seeing people, like, scream her praises from the rooftops. I wholly understand that now. She has an incredible voice, and she absolutely made that track her own.
Her work with The Gathering is so good. That's one of my favorite. One of my favorite
Mandalorian is such an essential album for that time period. If you do nothing else, Vincent, go seek out The Gathering's Mandalorian.
I got more homework now then.
It's just a phenomenal record with her.
The rest of Amorphous's discography just got shoveled off to the side. Vince has a new assignment now.
I'm in way over my head.
Well, I want to just touch on a couple things that I haven't seen come up. Everyone sort of takes different things away from an album, you know, like, just everyone's listening experience is different, but I want to touch on a couple highlights that I haven't heard talked about yet. I think, you know, once I got past the B, which, you know, I played on repeat a couple times, because, like, it really, you know, while Corey and I were talking when it first came out about, oh, maybe they should drop the harsh vocals, you know, blah, 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 we were kind of uncertain of it. It really grew on me. And by the time the album came out, I was like, yeah, I just want to listen to this. I just want to listen to this over and over again. All right. And then, you know, so I finally got through it. And the very next song, message in the amber. I believe, Corey, I believe I texted you and Josh, and my text was something akin to, I need this riff injected into my veins via continuous IV infusion. It was like, it's just this amazing, like, folky, melodic, like, so amorphous, so perfectly amorphous riff.
It's great.
I just adore it. And the rest of the song holds out. You know, like the intro, it's mainly a part of the intro, but they do bring it back in various forms throughout the rest of the song. I love it. Second, I would say the centerpiece of the album, Heart of the Giant.
Heart of the Giant and We Accursed, those back to back really impressed me for like the, I guess, moving towards the second half of the album.
Heart of the Giant, Corey, it feels like, because I know I'm going to bring this up because I know you're really into this one. Heart of the Giant feels like a sister song to Majestic Beast from Skyforger.
Yeah, it's a good call. I didn't really look at it from that perspective, but there's definitely a connection there.
There's just like such a devastation between those two, like a sense of like auditory devastation. Those riffs are just so heavy, so powerful, and they add like just the right amount of like dramatic flair, I guess, for lack of a better turn of phrase. But oh my God, I cannot get enough of it.
Yeah, and those two tracks feel to me like two of the heavier tracks.
And that's what I liked about this album. It still has a lot of those elements, those like heavier elements. We're talking about the folkiness and how pretty and fun it is, but it still has that punishment in there, which is good.
It's not a punishment, David. You like it. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
That depends on what you're into, Haricat.
It depends on what you're into too, my friend. So no.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, you two get a room for your masochism.
It's a family podcast. Thank you.
Wrapping things up. Like, what do I mean, Vince? Obviously, I know you can't 100% weigh in on this. You can, technically. It's the best album of the Tomy era for you.
Yeah, it's the only album of the Tomy era for me, so it's by definition the best that I've heard.
But for everyone else, I know, Mark, you said you had listened to Silent Waters and Skyforger and stuff like that.
Yeah, Thousand Lakes too, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But specifically, you know, with the regard to the Tomy Judson era of the band, and, you know, I guess maybe even, you know, more broadly, the whole of Amorphous, if you'd like to take it that far, where do you think the Queen of Time stacks up? Like, where would you place it in the pantheon?
This is Mark. I haven't listened to enough of the discography to really say, because I've only heard like three of the albums, but I would probably go Skyforger, Silent Waters, the current album. Yeah, I'd go that would be my order right there. Yeah. Most of you have heard their entire discography, so I just heard a tiny bit.
Okay. Well, no, I mean, hey, we can still get your input. It's still very much appreciated. Anyone else? Hera, Corey, Chris.
Give me like another year and I'll see. I mean, but the thing is, you know, Silent Waters is probably my favorite. Skyforger, they're pretty much interchangeable at the top of the list for me. But one of the things that I love about those albums is just how they have never gotten old. 2007 to 2009, and I still listen to them probably on a monthly basis, if not more frequently than that.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see how, I love this album right now. Queen of Time is incredible. I'm curious to see how well it sticks, I guess, long term. Because Under the Red Cloud, which I enjoyed as well, I don't find myself going back to that nearly as often as I thought I would when it came out. So we'll see. But it's probably gonna be a top five Amorphous album for me when it's all said and done. I just don't know where exactly yet.
I think this album's better than Red Cloud for me personally.
Agreed.
Very good.
Yeah, and I think, you know, this album could have gotten completely overblown. It could have been way over the top. You know, if you just kind of look at all the elements on paper, it could have been really uber, you know, like an Epica album, like a real kind of over the top album. And I, you know, the big takeaway for me is they given all the elements that go into the album, all the different things, it's done with a reasonable amount of restraint. It's a winner for me.
Awesome.
See, I'm gonna take the opposite track and kind of tag on to something that Vincent said earlier. So for me, still Under the Red Cloud is probably still my favorite, only because, Mark, to what you said, at least for me, Queen of Bee, it's a little, it's not overblown, I think, by any means. It's so solid. And as much as I like the album, I'm not as huge a fan as Among Stars as everybody else. I really like it. It's by far not my favorite track on the album, though. So for me, I'd probably put it kind of tied for second with Skyforger. The thing that puts Under the Red Cloud over the top for me is just, it's a little more concise. So to Vincent's point about, chopping off, you don't need to repeat it five times. There's something, and I've always been a stickler, even with my own music, 45 minutes. Like I come from the same era of Mark, where I grew up listening to late 70s, early 80s is where I kind of discovered metal. So for me, it has to fit on the side of a 90-minute tape. So, if you can fit 45 minutes and Under the Red Cloud, looking at it now, it's just over that, but it's still a little bit more concise. It's a little bit more in your face, which is just more of what I look for in music. So I'd probably put Queen of Time, dog yelping, animal cruelty aside, I'd put it right under Under the Red Cloud, at least in my kind of pantheon of Amorphis albums.
Yeah, this sucker is about an hour long.
Yeah. It is.
It does go by quicker than that, but you're right. It's
not a slog to listen to at all. So no. I don't want to give that impression, but it just, there gets a point, and it's probably toward the end for me where I'm like, okay, I'm ready for this to wrap up. And at least I don't get that right now with Under the Red Cloud for me.
Fair enough.
Hera? Hera, are you still with us?
I thought she was just looking pensive, but I think...
I thought she was just...
She might actually be off the call. Hera.
Oh, no. Rest in peace.
I guess we've lost Hera. I can't tell her little video icon. Oh, wait. Okay, it has switched to a picture. Maybe
she's gone. Yeah.
And she's gone.
And there it went.
Yeah. Okay. In that case, I will try and jump in and formulate some thoughts on this. I think.
Oh wait, no, she's back.
Oh. Hey.
Hey.
Son of a bitch.
I feel it.
There's the hair of me, know and love.
Sorry, I missed everything, but my internet decided to go out for some fucking god of a reason. So I'm doing it on my phone.
Good old internet.
I had the...
So now I'm on my data, which is great, which is fine, but this is...
Good thing we're wrapping it up then.
We'll be quick about it. Where do you think this album, where do you think Queen of Time, what's its place in the Amorphis pantheon? Where would you stack it up?
I can tell you where everything else stacks because, oh man, I want to talk about Circles so bad, but I won't. I want to talk about Circles so bad because I love you, Peter Tagman, but holy shit, that album, it's the worst.
It's not great.
It's the worst.
Okay, no, there's worse, but I can talk about Peter Tagman as someone that loves Hypocrisy, but like as a producer, it's kind of like a hit or a miss in a way. So for me, I love Circle for what it is, as it is. It's not my favorite. I can think of like two other albums that may be on top of that one. So it's there.
On top of, sorry, we lost you for a second. On top of this one, on top of Queen of Time?
So no, I can like Circle, we have to like rank it. Circle's probably at the lower and then Queen of Time is like at the top.
Okay. Very good. Very good. I'm somewhere. I chuck this thing somewhere in the middle. I think it's for me. My favorite is Skyforger, just because like Corey said, that album came out almost 10 years ago now, and I still go back to it. It's still just fucking fantastic. Every bit as enjoyable as it was back in 2009. I would put number two, I would say, maybe Under the Red Cloud. And then I think I would put this right behind it. Just if only because the tie broken, if only because, Under the Red Cloud has had a couple years now, I do still enjoy it. Mm-hmm. Has staying power that we just haven't, I you know, not a knock on Queen of Time, but we just haven't had enough time with it to assess that yet. I think 4 or 5, I flip flop between Eclipse and Silent Waters, which one goes where. I don't know. I like them both. I really do. But they're just a tad lower than those first three. Beginning of Time 6, and then Circle is very, very clear 7, at least for the Tomy era. Factoring in the rest of the discography, I don't know. I have high regard for Corellia and Thousand Lakes and Elegy. Sorry, Vince.
I don't think I mentioned. Oh no, I did. Yeah, I mentioned that I didn't like Elegy.
You did. Yes.
You did.
I think out of all even the albums, Widows, the three that I have listened to yet.
It felt like they were just trying to do too much.
No, but Even Against Widows, like I love that song. Oh my gosh.
It had its moments, but
okay. Fair enough.
Like if you want a good summation of like the first couple of albums, there's the Story 10th Anniversary release that they put out a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And that one is like a good resource for it. If you want to catch up on all of them, there it is.
Yeah.
Take that into consideration.
But
Jesus.
So that's where I'm at. I don't know. I think we've kind of come to a consensus. I think we all sort of like this album.
Yeah. It's varying degrees of thumbs up from everyone, but it's a thumbs up.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Amorphis, Queen of Time, album number 13. It is our album of the month for May. I don't know if we have come to consensus on, you know, like what, I mean, we're still very, very early days into June. Something could surprise us, but thus far, there's no consensus on what we're going to be back to talk about next month. So Corey, you can't spoil it.
There might be a front runner. I think there's one that we're all kind of leaning to, I think.
Okay, well, let's not talk about it here. Let's maintain a sense of surprise. I can think of
three worthy records we could talk about, and it's only 10 days into the month.
No, that's true. We got hit with an onslaught, especially this last Friday. There were some absolute fire that got dropped.
Yeah, there's
some of which I am still trying to work my way through, like that Yob album. I got about half an hour into it when I listened to it at work, and I was very rudely interrupted, and that kind of threw the brakes on that. So I think that's going to be tonight's homework, is trying
Vince, do or do not. There is no try.
Yeah.
Especially with Yob.
Especially with Yob.
Yeah.
No,
June has been an embarrassment of riches so far. Got a lot to choose from. There's Tomb Mold. There's Yob.
That's so good.
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of good stuff. So
I mean, I did
do we try to make the play for Riley Walker for the June album?
that's high on my list. No, wasn't that was a May?
Was that May?
That was late May. I think that was late May.
God damn it!
Riley Walker. Riley Walker, for folks at home, not a metal performer at all, but damn good record. You should absolutely listen to that. But yeah, so we won't have a spoiler because there's nothing to spoil just yet. We thank you all at home, and thank you to my esteemed colleagues as well for joining us here. Thank you to Haracat, Chris, Corey, Mark, and Vince. This was a wonderful chat, gentlemen. Any final thoughts before we sign off here?
Should we rank Amorphis albums on the blog like we did with Judas Priest and Iron Maiden?
Ooh.
I think you'd get some takers for that.
That could be fun, right?
Why not?
That would stir up a little controversy, I think.
Yeah. That was a fun little exercise. I wouldn't hate doing that again.
No.
Can we all agree Far From the Sun is the worst album? Can we agree on Far From the Sun? Because I can't even get through that.
I want to really, really talk about Pasi Kosinen just for like a minute. Because, no, here's why. Because I loved, and I think I'm in the low end of the spectrum where I say that I really liked An Anniversarium, but that's because it was one of the first Amorphis albums I went back to that I really enjoyed. But yeah, Far From the Sun is
And
also whatever you do, don't go listen to Ajatara unless you want to look into some really weird shit that Pasi Kosinen is into.
That's his black metal band, right?
No, Right, because he may or may not be a neo-Nazi, and I haven't confirmed that yet. So I'm like, ugh.
Oh, good.
Regard. Yeah. And I nice. Liked Mordecai, which was the bad part.
Well, then.
Mark here again. I'm going to riff on something that Chris talked about earlier, which is the whole album thing versus editing. I'm beginning to think in this current age, we've got albums that are playlist albums versus albums that may hold their own as an entire unit. And so I think my final thoughts are this Morpheus album is a good playlist album. Individually, I think the songs all hold up and I'll enjoy it for, you know, I think probably years to come. But it probably is not going to be my favorite album in terms of the way we used to think of albums as a complete kind of front to back experience. So,
yeah, I think that's a good point. And that's, yeah, I think I'm starting to realize that myself, just like getting to mull it over as I'm talking about it, is like, it is a good playlist album. All of the songs individually on it, if you listen to them out of context from the album, they're fine. They're pretty good.
As a whole,
yeah. But as a whole, I liked it. It was fun. But I thought that there was some stuff that they could do better. But there's always stuff you can do better, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna be old at heart here for a little bit too. No offense, guys. I've sort of gotten to a point.
To those of us that are actually old.
Yeah, I was gonna say some people here are older.
I was gonna say, how old are you people? Because what the hell?
Yeah, you're.
What do you mean, you people?
I think I am younger than all of you. That's
no, you,
I
you
will.
Are.
I
you
will
are.
Simply say that I am closer to 50 than 40. I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
Yeah, and I will say I'm much closer to 50 than Chris is because I'm beyond that point. So that makes me terrifyingly.
I'm somewhere between 17 and 82. So
yeah.
I will say, not just in music, in a lot of my media lately, podcasts in particular, I've sort of found myself longing for just conciseness, conciseness. I don't know what the word is, conciseness. I think it's conciseness.
Concision
does sound fun.
That sounds like a good death metal band name.
Yeah.
I once went to a concision. It looked painful. Yeah, just for the baby.
Oh boy. No, but I find like my podcast, I think the sweet spot is an hour. My albums, I think the sweet spot is like 40 to 50 minutes. Yes. You know, that's not to say that there aren't exceptions and, you know, bands can't do more than that, mm-hmm. and capture me the entire time. But I think, you know, the greatest success rate for, you know, me liking a record is if it's right in that sweet spot, like not,
yeah. Yeah.
Too overbearing and not, you know, too much of a chore to listen to. Just something, yeah. Something that's, you know, nice portion.
Yeah,
especially.
Sorry,
I was going to say, I'm exactly the same way with almost exactly the same time frames. It's just like I've like abandoned stuff if I'm like, oh, this is over an hour long. I don't have time for that.
Yeah.
And I think like keep tight 45 is always my like my and
well that's why 45. That's why that Panopticon record, I didn't really get a chance to sit down and listen to it in full until like a week before we had our podcast.
I got lucky, I think, in that I happened to find myself with a 2-hour uninterrupted chunk of time on the day that it came out, and Panopticon are one of the only bands that I will actively take that plunge for. Like I loved that album. I loved the Bellwitch album from last year. That was an hour and 20 minutes. There are not many other bands besides Bellwitch that could make me do that. And I had to fight for time to listen to that album, but.
You know, the other thing to say is how many people still listen to albums. And I'm of the opinion that metal fans are maybe, you know, one of a handful of kind of groups of music that by and large, young and old, I think we still do buy albums. I think we listen to albums. Yeah. But many
not just singles.
I am old enough to have an 18-year-old kid. And, you know, there's no way she and her friends would even think about buying that album. They don't even have the concept.
Yeah.
Well, that's speaking to something we talked about before the podcast. The lure of vinyl is that you don't have readily available the ability to skip tracks, right? You have to get up and walk over and lift up the needle. So there's something about, you know, we can argue to the cows come home about the audiophile, you know, fidelity of analog and vinyl versus digital. And as someone who collects vinyl, I happen to be on the fence of some digital sounds better and some analog sounds better. There's not a clear winner, but there is something to be said about the concentration of putting an album on and having the physical thing there and being at least not as predisposed to jump up and change that dial, so to speak.
Being present in the process.
And
that's also a large, I'm somebody who collects vinyl and tapes and physical formats and stuff. And I agree with Chris. There is some stuff that I will not buy on vinyl because I think that it just sounds better or works better digitally. But I try to buy the physical product as much as I can because I enjoy the ritual of it. Right. I enjoy like holding the thing in my hands, looking at the cover while I'm listening to it, you know, in large, very detailed format. And I enjoy like, you know, the getting up and flipping over. And I realize that that's not for everyone, but it's something that's very like soothing to me.
It does make the act of listening to music an event instead of like a supplement to whatever else you're doing.
Right.
And I enjoy music. I want to elevate like my listening experience because listening to music is a large part of what I do with my life. And it's exactly like what you said, you know, it makes it an event. It forces you to be like present in it.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yep. Hard agree.
Song order. Yep.
All righty. Hera, do we have another false exit?
No, because I'm thinking about like physical versus digital versus like the media. And so as someone who is pretty much, who grew up basically broke, like my 60 gigabytes or whatever of digital music that I have been for me like the thing that's kept me in listening to music for so long. And now that I have a somewhat stable job and can buy the physical things, like, sometimes I like having the digital because I commute for like 3 hours each day. And so I have the time to sit and listen to the digital.
Right.
Yeah.
How far is your commute? I know you're out in LA. Is that like 5 miles?
No.
It could be.
No. So where I live is a tiny little suburb in the smack of the middle of the San Fernando Valley. And my job is in Westwood. So that's...
Oh, boy.
And because I do not drive for reasons that I will not disclose on this podcast...
I wouldn't blame you.
It's an hour and a half commute to my job every day.
If I could get away with not driving, I would too. Shit.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Yep. It's awful.
All righty. Anyone else before I do another false outro?
I'm good.
Yeah. Are we good? All right.
Everybody cover your mics.
No. Hey, thank you guys all for joining up. I'm glad we were able to do this today. Thank you to the folks at home as well. I appreciate your listenership. And, you know, if you share the pod out or anything like that, we really appreciate the support. So we will be back this time, maybe not this time exactly, but sometime in July to talk about June's album of the month. Until then, you know where to find us, ninecircles.co, facebook.com/ninecirclesblog, Twitter and Instagram @_ninecircles. And of course, reach out to us by email, ninecirclesblog@gmail.com. For Hera, Chris, Corey, Mark, Vince, I am your host, Dan Kaplan. This has been our album of the month. I forgot what it was called there for a second. Our album of the month on the Nine Circles Audio thing. We will see you next time.
Please hang up and try again.
There you have it, folks. Our album of the month for May 2018, Amorphis, Queen of Time. Or Queen of Bee, if you're Chris Voss. I don't know if you guys caught that, but yeah, he did refer to the album as Queen of Bee at one point on the podcast. We were giving him shit for it. It was fun. At any rate, Queen of Time, album number 13 from Amorphis.
It's out now on Nuclear Blast. If you haven't, if you somehow 3-4 weeks in almost haven't taken a listen to this thing, do it. It's good. It's worth your time. So I am trying to think. I already did the call outs, the Facebook, the website, you know, email, all that stuff on the end of our group chat. One thing I do want to point out, because I forgot to include at the end of the group chat, is this is a podcast and it is available on the podcast services. I forgot to mention that because I wasn't used to that being a thing. We have an actual feed. We are working on getting to all your podcast providers, the various you know, different libraries you might use. We are currently on Google Play. We are on Stitcher. We are on TuneIn. We are on Simplecast. The elephant in the room at the moment is Apple Podcasts. I'm so used to saying iTunes, and I'm glad I remembered it properly this time. It is Apple Podcasts now. Apparently, they have changed not just their name, but also some of the regulations that they, you know, the criteria for podcasts. So we hit a little snag, but we are working on, you know, correcting the now flaws in our podcast feed that we weren't used to from before. And we will hopefully have this in their library sooner rather than later. I don't know if it'll be out by the time this episode posts, but hopefully soon. We are working on that. So you fruit fans out there, you iOS, iPod, iPhone, iPad people will have a more convenient way to listen to us soon, hopefully. Other than that, I don't think I have anything else. So thank you again to my colleagues from the Nine Circles blog. Thank you to all of you for listening. We really appreciate any support on this. And yeah, we will be back this time next month. Maybe not exactly this time next month, but sometime next month for our June album of the month chat. In the meantime, stay tuned. Check out the Nine Circles blog for any content in between. And we will talk to you soon. Bye-bye.